You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm, and of course, Dave DiNatale in for Jason Gibbs. We go now to the Ohio Business Machines hotline, and very happy to have on with us Paul Basir from PredictionMachine.com. Paul, thanks for being with us.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Well, I am a big fan of yours dating back many, many years using your service. And also when I worked on that other pregame show on CBS, we had a man versus machine segment featuring Prediction Machine. And certainly a very cool concept. For those who don't know what it is that you guys do there, let's start there. What is PredictionMachine.com?
Sure. Our mantra is that we play the game 50,000 times before it's actually played. We use what we call the predictilator, the machine, if you will, in Prediction Machine, to actually play-by-play simulate all of the players in any of the games that we cover in eight different sports over 100,000 events. We allow the players to interact and figure out just how likely basically anything is within the course of any event. So that's the general synopsis of it. We output then the likelihood of players doing anything from a fantasy perspective. Obviously, there's a gaming component to this, and the fans just want to know how their teams are doing. But as a big piece to that puzzle, the inputs matter. And getting the inputs right is critical. It's my 13th NFL season doing this professionally, and I've worked with several NFL teams to help them set up their draft boards because I have to know what it looks like when a college player goes from college to the pros, or anybody goes from one team to another team into a new role, and how players mature over the years. So I spent the better part of my career actually focusing more on the inputs and more draft analysis and what players are likely to do than really just trying to figure out how a simulation engine should work.
So you had the Cleveland Browns, obviously, with the largest wins gained based on this draft class. Who in this draft class, or how did you come up with that number based around the members that make up the 14-person class for the Cleveland Browns?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, so what we do is we look at, as players are being drafted, we look at, you know, what roles we expect them to fit. And basically, to have that kind of impact, you have to become a starter or at least a significant role player. And we looked at this roster, which obviously was missing a lot of pieces, and a lot of starters were question marks beforehand. And we see eight different players from our top 100 in the objective analysis that we did were drafted by the Cleveland Browns. Now, not all of them are likely to start, especially when a couple of them play similar positions. But what we do is we plug the new roster in, what it looks like from a starting rotation, or at least a two deep from before the draft to after the draft, to play it against a completely average schedule. So that's not the Browns schedule per se, and it doesn't mean that the Browns are all of a sudden going to, you know, set the league on fire, but they added over a win and a half from our projections just in doing that. By far the highest number that we've seen this season. Not the highest number we've seen all time, because they didn't get that one star quarterback that could really make that much of a difference.
Right.
But aside from quarterback, with the pass rushing abilities that they got and the playmaking receivers that they got, they're not going 0-14. They're going to definitely add some people that can add value to them this year and in years going forward.
Talking to, of course, Paul Basir from PredictionMachine.com. Paul, when you look at this, is the 1.5, is that more of a comment on where the roster was or on the quality and quantity of players added, or both?
Yeah. It's both, and it's probably equally both, in all honesty, because there were so many holes beforehand. You know, if the Seattle Seahawks, who are currently the number one team in our power rankings, had the exact same draft class, we'd grade it as the best draft class in the NFL, but they wouldn't add nearly as many wins, especially when there were no offensive linemen here drafted by the Browns, so they wouldn't have been filling points of need. But the point on that is, it's really a good combination of both, and I would say probably almost equal combination of both, and that doesn't just mean that this is a good that's commentary on this year. That means that, you know, these are players that we anticipate will contribute now when they need to, but also should be able to contribute going forward. And this might not sound like it's a great, you know, a great endorsement of what we do, but this is actually the second consecutive year in which we've had the Browns as number one team in terms of our draft rankings. And I went back and looked at it, and yeah, not all of the rookies starred, but when you look at Bibbs and Shelton and Gaines and Jennings, we're all pretty good. And then I think that Duke Johnson, Nate Orchard, and Ibrahim Campbell can all be excellent starters going forward in the future. There's two consecutive draft classes that we really, really like, with some talented guys like Cam Irving and others that might be able to do something in the future that set this team up to do really well, not just this year, but going forward.
So 1.5 this year, and based on, you know, your metrics and analytics,
yeah,
with 2 firsts and 2 seconds,
yeah,
those are probably, you know, next year, those, based on you know, how you come up with these numbers, those probably are going to be contributors, if not starters, next year. So the likelihood that the Cleveland Browns will be extremely high next year based on your metric is probably still very good, right?
Absolutely. And it can't be a surprise that, you know, you've got Paul DePodesta in that front office, and somebody who is probably similar in nerd capacity is liking everything that he's been able to do. But one thing that the Browns have certainly seemed to have figured out that I think the rest of the league is a little bit behind on still is that the most valuable asset you can have when building a team is draft picks. And it's mm-hmm. not just where those picks are taken, which matters, obviously, the higher the better, but how many you have. Again, they're not going to go 0-14, and next year they're already in a great position with high draft choices and a high quantity of draft choices, more so than anybody else at this point, that they're in a great position to be able to succeed as well. So I think that they'll continue this trend, and as an example of this, I thought that the worst drafting team for basically, you know, 10 years, from about 2000 to 2010, when I first started getting into this, was the Cincinnati Bengals. The Bengals themselves have actually now graded in the top 5 of our draft rankings in 5 of the last 6 years. And you can see how profound of an impact that has had on that franchise, completely changing the prospects of that franchise to being a contender and a playoff team almost every single year, at least a contender every year. So,
Paul, when you look at kind of the other part of your business, which is the games, and, you know, you help people out who, as our friend the kid likes to say, go to the window from time to time. Have you seen an adjustment from Vegas to what you're doing and your methodologies? Because I know how, you know, were able to get an incredible competitive advantage. Has that been a challenge trying to maintain that over, you know, the computers now in Vegas that they're using, kind of picking up on what you did?
Absolutely. I can't ignore that. And I remember the very first year that I did this and I was publishing, you know, kind of pick information, we would have consistently confidence from those 50,000 simulations of each game that a team could cover the spread or, you know, relative to Vegas's expectation was an incredibly strong pick, and covering the spread or the over-under might have hit 70% of the time, which just is insane confidence to have that something's going to succeed. And we were hitting at that rate for the better part of that time period. And we don't see that likelihood anymore, let alone the accuracy. The accuracy is basically what we say our confidence is in the picks, and I'm happy about that, but I certainly have seen some adjustments. I think when you look at kind of the in-game market, the fantasy market and daily fantasy markets, and going into the season, the over-under season win totals, there's still some inefficiencies in the markets that I've found, but it isn't nearly as obvious or as overt as it might have been, and that's because everybody's kind of playing catch-up to what we do. But, and I always say this, I live in Cincinnati. My neighbor's not going to buy Procter & Gamble stock because he lives in Cincinnati, but he's probably going to have a strong opinion betting on or against the Bengals just based on his mood that day. And for that reason, this market will always be more exploitable than the financial market or Wall Street.
And Paul, when you take into account, do you take into account, you know, scheme changes? Yeah. Or in this case, yes, there's schemes on both sides as well as a new head coach, or is it simply all player-driven?
It's more player driven. In the analysis, the simulations, it's all real player driven. But in football, more than any of the other sports we cover, baseball, basketball, hockey, soccer, and football, American football, we see coaches and schemes make that much of a difference. And so while I publish all of those rankings ahead of time, and I mentioned the Browns had 8 in the top 100, they actually had 6 in the top 45 draft choices that we had. That's all good news, but obviously they do have to fit. And I have the utmost respect for Hugh Jackson. I will start there and say that I think he's going to be a tremendous head coach. And what I've evaluated from him, I think he does a good job of taking the players that he gets and putting them in the best position to succeed. Obviously, on the offensive side is what our examples have been there. So that's all part of it that all plays a role, and that'll factor into what our actual simulated results are. Because, you know, we talk about it all the time. Jared Goff was the best quarterback in this year's draft class, according to our analysis. There's certain teams that he could have gone to where his numbers look completely different in our final projections than they would look like otherwise. But I will tell you this, and I want to make sure to get this point across because it's directly related to the Browns. The most translatable stat, the easiest skill to take from college to the pros, is pass rush ability, and that is almost independent of scheme. Obviously, you have 3-4, 4-3, you've got, you know, sub packages, etc. But if you can get to the quarterback in college, you can usually get to the quarterback in the pros, and you can see that the Browns completely loaded up on guys that didn't really have any problems getting to the quarterback in college.
No, that certainly was a big focus. Talking with Paul Basir from PredictionMachine.com. All right, Paul, give us the hard, cold facts. Win total for the Browns per Prediction Machine in 2016.
Yeah, so all of these great things I've been saying about the Cleveland Browns do matter in 2016, but they and I made sure to add that caveat several times, they matter far more in 2017 and beyond, because
right.
while doing that, while having the best draft class, while adding the most amount of wins of any team in the entire NFL, we still only saw the Browns go from the 32nd ranked roster before the draft to the 30th ranked roster before the draft. So still a bottom three team in the NFL, and I hope the fans understand that. But I think they should be in the 6.5 projected range for win totals, so 6 or 7 wins is our expectation.
Wow.
Not likely to be in contention, but that is an improvement from this draft class, an improvement from this front office, and I think going forward, it's not going to be very long before they're right up there with the Bengals, the Steelers, and others in terms of contending for the division in the playoffs.
From your mouth to God's ears, Paul, we all hope that is true. And I'll tell you, I think people in Cleveland this year, if the Browns came out and won 6-7 yeah. games, people would be very, very happy with the progress and really be excited about the turnaround that's happening here. There's another team whose win total is very near and dear to our hearts that you might imagine. That would be the Philadelphia Eagles, and we're hoping that you're going to say they're going to bottom out and the Browns will have their first-round pick next year, which we hope is number one overall. But what do you see from the Eagles yeah. with all their moves this year?
That was a beautiful transition because I wasn't prepared for it. I hadn't thought that far through, but I have a tremendous answer for you and the fans, and that is that while the Browns moved up from 32 to 30, the Eagles, after the draft, fell to number 32 in our power rankings, the
yes!
worst overall roster in the NFL, and they were one of only 4 teams in the NFL that didn't add a player in the draft that we project as a starter for
right.
2016. Now, the Cardinals, the Broncos, and the Patriots are the other 3 teams. Those are good teams that have good rosters. The Eagles don't have a good roster,
right.
and yet they fell that far. So, you know, I'm not saying number one overall pick. I can't guarantee anything along those lines. But as of right now, they're in the best position to do so.
I'm holding you to it. We'll take yeah. it. You know, when you look at their draft, right, they use the number 2 pick on Carson Wentz,
yep.
who is, in theory, not supposed to play this year with Sam Bradford there. Then they didn't have the second round pick, and I believe their third round pick was a center or, yep. or a guard. It was a guy who could play in the interior of the offensive line. So they didn't get any impact players in this draft, and in fact, they lost more players via trades, the trade with the Dolphins where they unloaded Kiko Alonso and Byron Maxwell. So their roster really didn't get upgraded at all. New coach, new system, hopefully some growing pains there. Traded away to Marco Murray, so I like that. 32nd.
Get good in 2 years. So, just don't be good next year.
Let's phrase this in a way that we like, then. What do you think is the likelihood that the Browns have at least 1 pick in the top 5 next year or 2 in the top 10?
Yeah, I would say it's incredibly likely. I would say it's incredibly likely that both actually happen. Incredibly means more than 50% in my mind, at least.
I'll take it.
So that each of those, and I would say it's probably, if I had to put odds on it, I would say that the Browns are overwhelming favorites to have the number one overall draft choice, because it's not just the Eagles, obviously, then, who we grade as 32nd. They're also the third worst team in the NFL still. So even if they get to that, you know, even if they don't quite get to that 6.5-7 win range, it could be a good thing for the future of this entity. So,
now, did you have a win total for the Eagles yet?
It'll be, well, it looks like right around 6 as well. So, I mean, rarely do we think teams are going to be terrible,
right.
and rarely do we think things are going to win 13, 14-plus games, because it's very difficult to be expected to do that at this point, you know, well before the season starts. But, you know, that is the second worst mark right now in the NFL, so there is that.
All right, Paul, if there's one team out there that we're not talking Browns, we're not talking Eagles, but that you think is going to make a massive jump up this year, according to what you do, and that who would that team be?
Well, I'll give you one that I think will make a massive jump up, but I don't know if that all of a sudden they're relevant. The Tennessee Titans also added 7 of our top 100 players in the draft class this year. Marcus Mariota was the 3rd best quarterback I've ever evaluated, which goes back to not quite the Aaron Rodgers, Alex Smith season, so 2006 to now. So I think that's a team that jumps up from number 26 to number 18 in our power ranking. So a huge jump,
wow.
adds over a win in this draft class. I think it'll be good. But a couple of the teams to pay attention to that I think will be relevant then for the postseason. The Giants added our number one wide receiver in Sterling Shepard.
Yeah,
to the
we roster. Were big fans of Sterling
yeah.
Shepard's here.
And some pass rushers as well, so a very similar MO to what we just saw out of Cleveland, though obviously a better roster beforehand. And San Diego. San Diego is a team that went from, you know, a lot of major concerns, and they still have some of those concerns on the offensive line, but they completely overhauled the defense, I think, from last year to this year. And Phillip Rivers isn't going to be that bad every year, as long as he can stand upright. So I think that's a team to watch as bouncing back and being in the postseason.
Since you talk about these players, who did you think for the Browns was maybe their best draft value? Where were you guys on, for example, Hollywood Higgins, who some thought
sure.
was a second-round pick, ended up going in the 5th?
Well, let me give you those 6 guys that ended up in the top 45 in our draft rankings, because
sure.
they weren't drafted in that order. We had Emmanuel Ogba at 13, So obviously a second rounder, 13th pick. Corey Coleman was 15, so that makes some sense there. He was our number two wide receiver behind Sterling Shepard. Okay. Joe Schobert at number 27, so a guy that gets the quarterback. Higgins, as you mentioned, at 38. So I had him as barely outside the first round, as he was the fifth best wide receiver, but still very good, especially when you consider his productivity when he's healthy. Carl Nassib at 45, and Scooby Wright at 42, another guy who had one banged up bad year. One banged up year this year, but was very good and incredibly productive.
Sure, 2 years
one
ago.
Year he had healthy. So if you know those are a lot of high ceiling guys. We only have 14 picks. You know, a couple of those guys hit their ceiling beyond just the first couple round picks, and all of a sudden you've got the makings of an epic draft class.
No question about it. Talking with Paul Basir from PredictionMachine.com. Paul, you mentioned earlier Jared Goff was the guy. I agreed with you. I didn't see he and Carson Wentz in the same category from the way that I evaluate quarterbacks. What did you see in this quarterback class? And which leads me to, of course, the question. Cody Kessler, Hugh Jackson saying, trust me on this one. What say you?
Well, we'll start with the quarterback class in general. We had Jared Goff as, on a 0 to 10 scale, he got an 8.3. That's just really relevant to Prediction Machine. But to put that into perspective, that was identical to Teddy Bridgewater, ahead of Johnny Manziel and Jameis Winston, some guys we've seen obviously go early over the last two rounds, well ahead of Blake Bortles, but behind, you know, the upper echelon guys, the Russell Wilsons, the RG3s, the Cam Newtons and Andrew Lucks of the world that we've seen historically, and Marcus Mariota I just mentioned. So he was our 26th overall draft pick, but the number one with a bullet quarterback in this year's draft class. Okay. Nobody else even had a top 50 grade, and Carson Wentz himself was 96th overall in our rankings.
Wow.
As fourth best quarterback in this year's draft class. Kessler fits that mold of he had one good year, one bad year. The good year happened to be in 2014, but still didn't dominate. It's hard to expect a guy to have that kind of touchdown interception ratio. A lot of that was probably a fluke or luck, and it's going to be difficult for him to translate, I think, that into the NFL. He was our 13th ranked quarterback.
Okay.
For Cody Kessler.
So not high.
Not high. Just behind Cardale Jones and Jeff Driscoll. There's a lot of guys that have a lot of variability around them, boomer bust candidates, and he's one of them. But he's just one of them. He's not a guy that we are confident in will be successful.
Do you think RG3, you mentioned him as a guy that you had a high grade on, that he can still be successful in the NFL?
Absolutely. If he's healthy. I mean, I graded him as better than Andrew Luck, and I'm comfortable with that. It's published. You can find that information on the site. And barely, but I had him there. And we had him only behind Cam Newton and Marcus Mariota over the last, you know, decade now that I've been doing this in terms of my quarterback draft ranking. So if he is healthy, if he can ever get back to at least what his health was early on in his career and in his last year at Baylor, then I think he can be a quarterback that leads this team to the postseason. Again, I don't know or think it's going to happen in 2016, but he's a guy that I think you have to kind of incorporate into this year's draft class or think about in terms of the transition from last year to this year as being an asset and, in my mind, a major upgrade to what that quarterback position's been.
Paul, thanks so much. Fascinating stuff. Check him out, PredictionMachine.com. If you want to get an advantage or you just want to learn some stuff, it is a great resource for you. Again, PredictionMachine.com. Paul, thanks so much for the time and the insights. That was a lot of fun.
Enjoyed it. Thanks, guys.
All right. Paul Basir, our guest here on the hotline. When we come back, we'll open up the phones, 216-578-0850, before Sir Andrew joins us at the bottom of this hour here on ESPN 850. It's a new day. I'll tell you what, Dino, I'm fired up right now.
No kidding, man.
Paul Basir got me excited. 6.5 wins, I'd be dancing.
Oh, yes.
Dancing in the streets.
6.5 wins would put us where? Like 10th, 11th, 12th drafting?
Yeah, but then the Eagles are going to bomb out, so that's going to be our...
Exactly. I was going to say that Eagle pick could be money.
I know.
Pro Football Focus, by the way, thinks that the Browns will have, between their pick and the Eagles pick, the first and seventh picks in the draft next year. And they have the Browns taking Malik McDowell from Michigan State, like a DeForest Buckner, interior pass rushing defensive lineman. And with the first pick, Deshaun Watson, the quarterback of Clemson. Obviously way too early for any of that stuff. But there are a lot of very good running backs and a lot of very good wide receivers in this draft.
Yes.
Playmakers.
Score, touchdowns, sack the quarterback.
That's it.
Do it. That's right. Let's go to the phones now before we get Tuesdays with Sir Andrew. Damon in Beachwood, welcome.
Gentlemen, thanks for having me.
You got it, man. How you doing, Damon?
Doing well. How you guys doing?
Good.
Good, man. I just wanted to call in and say what I've kind of gleaned from listening to, and I haven't listened to everything, but it seems to me that the Browns, quote-unquote, analytics is really relies a lot on just an absence of ego. Now, I know there are exceptions for Hugh in that area, but I mean, I haven't heard from this regime, at least not a lot, is them referencing the history or, you know, playing like a Brown and all that, and making reference to all the misery that we've gone through. They're just running an organization, and they're going to do it like they would do any other organization, and they're going to try to succeed. And I think that's what I'm gleaning from this, is that they're just, you know, they're just going by the numbers. They're just making the decisions that they would make anywhere.
Yes, and I think that's kind of what, you know, Paul DePodesta was talking about, when sometimes you do have to make tough decisions, but you trust your process, and you know, you're going to be there and make those decisions. But, right, they have a plan. They're sticking to it. It's not about ego. It's about their process and their plan and how to implement it.
I think the only exception might be Kessler, though. I mean,
sure, and that's fine. And
yeah,
I think,
yeah, that's fine, right. And you know,
with
what
14 picks,
you
get a luxury pick every once in a while.
Sure.
Yeah, why not? I mean, we'll see what happens. I mean, the big thing is we have competition. We got young guys in here that are known for their work ethic. So if you're going to slack off in minicamp or in the off season, you're going to get pushed. You're going to get pushed out because these guys are not going to quit. I mean, there's probably going to be some fights this off season. We're going to see, some fireworks, I think, because I mean, it's going to be really contentious.
It is. And you know what? As he came out of the gates talking about, you know, the analytics and so on and so forth, you know what it seems like to me when he talks about his reference to the egos is all we've heard of. We heard collaboration. When, you know, Sashi Brown got promoted and the hiring of Hugh Jackson, Paul DePodesta, Andrew Berry, and they all happened, you know, not all at the same time, is you're hearing a lot of, we did this, we thought, we think, we. And that might be, I don't believe it to be a facade to come across that way when you hear Andrew Berry or Sashi Brown or Hugh Jackson speak at the podium or speak to the media. You don't hear any, I thought this guy, he was mine, you know.
Sure.
Me, mine, I thought, all those things are gone. So when Jimmy Haslam went back and made the decision to change things up, to fire Mike Pettine, to fire Ray Farmer, to promote Sashi Brown, he referenced collaboration, and we're seeing that. You know, ego is about me. And everything you've heard and everything that has happened is about we, us. And I think that's the change of the guard that I've seen happen firsthand right in front of us in the last 4 months.
I think you're exactly right about that, and hopefully that can continue as things get real now. Guys are in here to go ahead and work, and they will report the rookies, of course, on Thursday. Eric in Connecticut, welcome to the show.
How you doing today?
Good, how are you?
Good, I'm a little late, but I got to tell you, Mope Hedman strikes again.
Mo!
So we've had a lot of rain up here, and my wife has been getting on me to clean the driveway. Well, wouldn't you know, Sunday night I go out to do it, and it's clean. Because Mope Hedman had his brooms out after that Cavs victory on Sunday afternoon.
He's caused a ruckus. He's caused quaking in the streets in Connecticut, and now he's sweeping driveways.
He's all over.
There's limitless Mope Hedman.
It's limitless. And you know how I know it was him?
Pizza boxes?
Exactly right. Pizza boxes. Absolutely.
My Mope Hedman.
Let me just say one thing about this analytics stuff that I think everybody's missing. I think we're all focused on, or everybody's focused on, analytics as numbers-driven. How many sacks, how many completions, and things like that. But I think it goes much deeper than that. It's about really deciding what qualities that players have coming
out
of college that lead to success in the pros. And it's not just about the numbers. And I think if you look at these guys they drafted, I really think there's a very calculated effort to go with guys that have had to overcome significant adversity to attain success in college. And I think they've decided that that's going to translate in the NFL. I'm excited to see it. Let's go, Browns.
Let's go, Browns. Thank you for the call, Eric, and the Mope Hedman sighting. It's good to know. Keep track of him. He's everywhere.
I thought he got stuck on the side of the road with a flat, and Mope Hedman might have came by with like an air compressor because he always has flat tires. Helped a guy out with flat tires.
Yes. My Mope Hedman. I do think one of the things we talked about when Paul was hired, I said it's not just going to be about what stats translate. I said it's going to be about what traits. They're going to go through all the information they've had from all the interviews they've ever done, all the players. Are there any traits that lead to, you know, success in the NFL? Are there any interview responses that correlate with guys who are successful in
or
the NFL?
Or size and speed.
Totally.
Who are the best receivers in the National Football League that have not run a sub 4.65 40? And what traits do they have, and why do we need to make it a priority if this many guys have succeeded, played X amount of years, this productive, in this category? Why must we find that sub 4.640 guy? You know, those types of things, just from a wide receiver position.
How, what correlates to success in the NFL?
Number of linebackers under 6 foot tall, inside linebackers. How does it correlate to their success?
Who are the ones, Lennon Fletcher? Would he be one of the exceptions? But you're right.
It's
looking at everything.
Yes.
It's looking at absolutely everything.
And the thing about it is, that's the interesting question is, maybe when we have Sashi, the next time we get him is like, okay, draft is over. He'll help with 53-man roster. September 11th gets here. What is Paul DePodesta's role now in his team? As the season, you know, the fruits of his labor are already in a Browns uniform. And the season, that you know, it's go time now. Does it shift, or is it something football-driven now that he'll have to learn, or that Sashi and Andrew Berry and Hugh Jackson want him and his team to work on to give us a competitive advantage on Sundays?
As I say, you certainly would think that if there is something in that vein, that he would be tasked
Correct.
With that. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, Sir Andrew Gribble here for Tuesdays with Gribbs on CBD. Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Fog has moved in to the Dog Bowl here in Berea, but that fog is none other than the great Sir Andrew Gribble. Gribbs, how are you?
Doing great. What's going on, guys?
Gribbs, I want to talk for a second about our debate segments on Dog Pound Report, which I know have caused some concern in the Gribble household. Your mom not happy with us debating.
She just wants us to get along.
Tell her we get along.
We very much get along.
It's,
but you know,
it's octing.
We've hashtag embrace debate on the Dog Pound Report, and I think it's a friendly, good-natured debate.
It is.
There would be no Sir Andrew if it weren't for Nathan Zagura.
Well, I'm not going to take credit for the birthing of this fine man, but maybe the naming.
That's what I'm saying.
Yes.
No, there's another great show on Sunday as well.
It was fun, and you guys can check us out every Sunday, 11:30 on News Channel 5. And, of course, Gribbs has it covered as a senior staff writer for the ClevelandBrowns.com at ClevelandBrowns.com, and, of course, the Browns mobile app. Gribbs, we had Bill Polian on earlier today. Not as fired up about things as Paul Basir just was. So let's talk more about Paul for now from Prediction Machine. He's 6.5 wins, he says, the Browns over-under is for this year, which I was pretty pleased with. And he also said that the Eagles have the worst roster in the NFL.
Man.
How does that make you feel?
That's a lot to digest.
But it is a lot.
I think
it's almost too good to be true.
My key thing is when you look back at last year's team, very well could have been a 6.5 win team.
Easily.
If you make some plays at the end of games, hold on to some leads. That's just the way the NFL works. And you know, the 50-50 games for the Browns last year in terms of when they were in it in the fourth quarter, almost every single one broke the other way except the Ravens game.
Denver.
Yeah, the Ravens game in Baltimore, but then
the Ravens game
at home. That was a game you probably should have won. Broncos, Cardinals games. I know Cardinals pulled away, but that was a game you were in position, had a good chance to maybe pull off an upset. So that doesn't maybe shock me as much as maybe the Eagles thing does, because I thought the Eagles last year, another team that was in the hunt, I would say, all the way up until the end of the season, they seem to have a couple of big games go against their way as well. So I guess I'm just not, I don't know the Eagles enough to maybe analyze why they would take such a big step back, which would be a big step back to go from where they were as a fringe playoff team to 32nd. But, you know, maybe that's the case. An unhappy quarterback situation can certainly set a bad tone going into the season, which is what they have.
And they've divested so much talent. I mean, when you think about the guys who would have worn an Eagles uniform in the last few years, DeSean Jackson gone, Jeremy Maclin gone, DeMarco Murray gone, LeSean McCoy gone. A lot of those guys have moved on. And when you looked at their draft this year, their first-round pick is Carson Wentz, who's supposed to play in the future. No second-round pick. And then they used their third-round pick on interior linemen. So they didn't really add any high-profile players. And they traded away Kiko Alonso, traded away DeMarco Murray, traded away Byron Maxwell as well this offseason.
And I guess you also have to factor in that the NFC East, I think even though it might be another division that's kind of, you know, muddled in that 8-8, 9-7 range, but I can make arguments for the other three teams on how they've gotten better this offseason.
Yeah.
The Cowboys in particular, you get Romo back, you add Ezekiel Elliott to that offense, they're going to be better.
And a healthy Dez.
Yeah, I mean, the Giants have really upgraded their defense. They still are dynamic on offense. And the Redskins were a playoff team last year. And you think if you can get the same Kirk Cousins, they've added some weapons to the offense, and I think they've got a solid defense and a really good GM that's built that team the right way.
McLuhan.
I would be surprised to see any other prediction but the Eagles finishing fourth in that division, but it's just a matter of if they're a 6-10 fourth or if they're a truly 4-12, 3-13 fourth, which would not go over well in Philadelphia. I guess you also have to factor in new head coach. You don't know what you're going to get out of Doug Peterson as well. So it's something that we'll certainly be following. It'll be a little bit more, maybe more interesting than when we followed that Buffalo pick last year when they got off to a hot start and it kind of ruined the hopes of a pretty high pick.
So week one victory and then a 15 losses in a row. Potentially for us, for the Philadelphia Eagles, correct?
Well, let's beat them week one.
That's what I'm saying. A week one victory by us,
and then the Eagles go 0-16.
I would much prefer the Eagles, the Browns' first pick next year, be the Eagles' pick, not the Browns' pick. That's the ideal situation. Yes. What you want when you make a trade like this?
That would be so fun. It'd be glorious. He said we asked him chances of the Browns having one top five pick, two top ten. He said much better than 50%. He said he felt
for both
of those things to be true.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to find a team that's not optimistic at this time of year, but I guess most of the stories out of Philadelphia have been not so optimistic this year. It's just a weird quarterback situation when you have a guy that really doesn't want to be there anymore and a quarterback you drafted who his biggest selling point is his upside, not his current.
And did you see what Andy Benoit said today?
No.
He goes, "I wouldn't be shocked at all if Wentz beats out Bradford." He's like, they both basically have to learn
a
new system.
On. That guy. We're having a conversation between Bradford and Wentz, and they guaranteed $12 million to Chase Daniel as their backup.
Yeah.
Is everyone just discounting his ability to play in the NFL based around the moves of guaranteeing what they did to Bradford?
I'd like to be Chase Daniel right now.
Huh.
Come on. She's great. There's no pressure on him. Nobody really is. You're right. Nobody's talking about Chase Daniel. It's like, Wentz or Bradford?
Good work if you can get it.
Fantastic. Matt Flynn, that guy's a genius. Matt Flynn is an absolute genius. All right, Gribbs, rookies are reporting this week. What are you hoping to see here Friday, Saturday, Sunday?
Well, it's just you want to – I think the key thing that you're going to watch is, and this is the easy thing to digest in a rookie minicamp setting, is what kind of explosiveness you have at that wide receiver position. And there's going to be four guys out there plus probably a bevy of tryout guys. We don't really know the quarterback situation yet for the rookie minicamp outside of Cody Kessler, but – you know, Cody Kessler, Corey Coleman, they've already worked together in the offseason in their training before the combine in California, so they're going to have a little bit of chemistry as well. But, you know, I'm just excited to see Higgins, Peyton, Coleman, and Ricardo Lewis. I think a guy that has something to prove is both Lewis and Higgins from where they were drafted and maybe the knocks on their game. So I think the competition begins right away at that position. And this is always a fun weekend to just see the EJ Bibbses of the world. The even last year, I know he didn't make the team, but like the Luke Lundys of the world. He played great for that weekend. He got to deal with the team, was with the team for a couple months, but didn't make the 53. But you know, that's a big weekend for a guy. I think this is a huge moment in their lives to literally make an NFL roster by showing what they can do on the field in that 2-3
remember last
day stretch.
Year Shane Wynn.
Yeah,
Cleveland
Shane
kid caught a touchdown in the preseason.
Yeah, I mean that's what makes this weekend enjoyable, and I think that it's something to look forward to both Friday and Saturday in a stadium-like atmosphere with fans watching at FanFest.
Absolutely. Well, you focus predominantly on the offense, and I think that's where you know we addressed, and I think people want to see the explosive plays. But maybe how about this? Outside of Emmanuel Ogbah, who's truly a glorified first-round pick, being you know chosen at 32nd. Who defensively are you going to be paying most attention to throughout the couple days?
I think Joe Schobert is one that interests me just because we really don't know what the plans are for him right away. We keep just hearing, you know, he's an outside linebacker in college, 3-4, knows that kind of defense, but really physically doesn't really fit that part in at the NFL level. So he's been everyone just says this is up to Ray Horton.
Yep.
So this is really his time to kind of experiment, see what maybe he can do well, what roles he could potentially fill. I think it's hard to imagine him in some kind of starting capacity, but I think certainly a guy you could use situationally, both inside and outside, and clearly someone that they have big plans for on special teams as well.
Is there an article about that at
ClevelandBrowns.com? Oh, there is.
Oh, my.
There just might be. No, there was one. Yeah, we posted that yesterday. But, you know, it's just crazy. We're going through each one of these draft picks and realizing, you know, we really haven't written too much about them. That's why I'm working on one right now about Jordan Payton. Maybe not the most you know talked about Browns draft pick, but really interesting in the fact that he had an older brother that played at Oregon State, played with Houshmandzadeh, and has that kind of connection, knows a lot about Hugh Jackson because Houshmandzadeh had some of his best years under Hugh Jackson, and so did Chad Johnson, another Oregon State guy
who's still lobbying, by the way, to come up here as a wide receiver coach on Twitter. He does it at least once a week,
right? Gribbs, the one other guy, I think he's probably the least talked about draft pick of the Cleveland Browns because of the run on wide receivers and what we did early in draft. Trey Caldwell, the defense, the corner out of Louisiana Monroe. What role is he going to play for us? Is he a nickel guy, inside, outside? And does he have a chance to make this team?
Yeah, I think he does have a chance to make the team, just because you've got, first off, you've got the Joe Hayden injury that's going to be lingering throughout the offseason. I think that's going to give more opportunities to some players. And I think you're dealing with a bunch of young defensive backs outside of Tremont Williams that, even though they've performed well in spurts, they're going to deal with a clean slate here with a new coaching staff that's going to judge them all as equals. So I think all these guys are going to have to prove themselves. And I think, even though you have guys that you seemingly have locked into spots, like Kaywan Williams, you would think would be locked into your nickel, you know, I think that that's a position that a Trey Caldwell can come in and provide some competition. I think, you know, players like Charles Gaines, Justin Gilbert, Pierre Desir, you know, they're all on equal footing right now with this defense and under Ray Horton. So I think that nickel seems like it would be a logical fit. But as the coach said, he can play inside and outside, and size measurables and the work ethic that we keep hearing about him, it reminds you a lot of what coaches used to say about Buster Skrine.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what makes you wonder if they see something, maybe not this year, but down the line on a way that he can help out this defense. But I think the Browns need they need better play at defensive back, and opportunities are wide open there outside alongside Tremont Williams, Joe Hayden.
It's going to be one heck of a competition to see who makes the final 53 at the cornerback spot, because there are so many players there now. When you think about Hayden, Tremont, then you get into Gilbert, Pierre Desir, Kaywan Williams, Charles Gaines from a year ago, Jamar Taylor, former second-round pick out of Boise State, who you just acquired in the trade, Trey Caldwell.
And you added college cornerbacks, an undrafted and a safety, and A.J. Stamps. And I think Kenya Dennis could potentially play safety at the NFL level, so then you have two true cornerbacks and two safeties potentially added to the mix. And, you know, again, don't sleep on undrafted free agents. I mean, these at least one or two, I'm going to say, are probably going to make the team. I mean, that's just how it works all across the NFL.
Sure.
So you've got to see what they can do. And these are guys that were signed for a reason, not just tryout guys. They see something in them and see a potential fit on defense.
The numbers were released today, and again, these can all change leading up to the 2016 season, but one stuck out with me. Cody Kessler, number 5. Do you have any insight here? Were there any discussions between Cody Kessler and Travis Kuhns about number 6?
No, I did not hear about any of that. So he was number 6 at USC.
Number
obviously.
6 at USC, and he's wearing number 5 now.
Got to respect the veterans.
Travis Kuhns.
Is he really a veteran? I think for a nominal amount, Kuhns could be swayed.
Maybe there's not as much. Maybe that USC chapter in Cody Kessler's life that involved about 5 or 6 different coaches and all sorts
he might
of
want to move on.
All sorts of drama. Maybe this is a new chapter. You know, take one step back to take 2 steps forward, which is what he did from 6
to 5.
Trying
to look up if I can quickly get Travis Kuhns' college number. He was number 46. So certainly he doesn't have a long-term linking to the number 6.
You look at a lot of college teams. It's rare when those kickers get the single-digit numbers. Those are coveted by the 4- and 5-star recruits, you know, during that.
Why
process.
Is that? So you and I were talking about this the other day. Like, in Alabama, all the stars always wear
they're all double numbers.
Why do they all want single-digit numbers?
I don't know. We'd have to ask Corey Coleman about this, because he had the definition
of
the single
one.
Number 1.
One I get. One I feel like a lot. I'm number 1. I get that. But, like, people are killing to get number 9, for example, in college. That's a very popular number. Number 8.
Or 5.
Yeah. 4.
Nick Saban would always say
we could get through all 9 single-digit numbers here. 7.
Yeah, Saban. For Nick Saban, it would always drive him nuts, too, because he likes to use his 5-star recruits on special teams. And that's where you're going to run into trouble with the double numbers. Like, Derrick Henry, no joke, during his sophomore year, changed his number 3 or 4 times, because they couldn't make it work on special teams with the double numbers. So he was all over the map before he finally settled on his final number. And that's it's a weird thing, but you got to play the game in recruiting, and you maybe make some promises on numbers. You got to deliver with your top prospects.
All right, Gribbs, the one thing that you're most excited to see, rookie minicamp.
I think it's an opportunity. I'll focus on the easy one with the quarterback. I think there's been a lot of skeptics out there about where the Browns took Cody Kessler, but this is someone that you want to see out there, and you want to see him making the throws and connecting with his new teammates. I think, you know, maybe you don't have expectations for Cody Kessler this season, and if things work out ideally, you wouldn't want to see Cody Kessler this season. What you would
sure.
want Robert Griffin to seize the job and let Cody Kessler develop behind the scenes and become a better quarterback that way, instead of being thrown into the fire. But you know, I think that you want to see the accuracy that Cody Kessler has, and this is obviously in shorts and not as much defense, but you want to see that, and you want to see confidence from that position. and just kind of affirm the decision that Hugh Jackson made and that we all kind of trust him.
I can't wait to see Ogbo running around because you don't see many guys that big, that strong, and that fast. And then just seeing my man Al Saunders coach up four rookies that he's going to have kind of running around with him, I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, he's going to be one of the busiest guys out there. I mean, he was busy at those practices a couple weeks ago with the group he had there. And now it's just, you know, these are all new faces, and I think they're going to be broken in right away and treated like they should be knowing what's going on, even if they don't have any clue.
That's right. They need to do it every single day. That's what they need to do in that wide receiver room. Consistency, Matt Wilhelm. Consistency. Gribbs, always a pleasure. Follow him on Twitter, @Andrew_Gribble. This week, maybe on Dog Pound Report for your mom, I'm gonna let you smack me around a little bit.
We'll see. Maybe we'll just hug at the end of the segment.
Debate and then hug. Segment 3, Dog Pound Report this Sunday, News Channel 5. You don't want to miss it. All right, we'll be back. Final thoughts here on CBD. All right, wrapping it up here. If you missed the show, we kicked things off with Bill Polian, the Hall of Famer. And then at 2 o'clock, we had Paul Bazier from PredictionMachine.com. If you want to get optimistic, I'd recommend listening to the Paul Bazier portion of the program. Not that Bill Polian was negative.
No.
He just was kind of...
It's coming to you from a different mindset.
Yeah, he's worried about the long-term view and the, you know, waiting to see how it plays out, which is totally fair.
A Hall of Fame view. You know, after building it multiple times and understanding exactly what it takes to compete and get to the final game.
And he knows the Browns need their Peyton Manning or their Jim Kelly if they want to get there and they want to compete. Dino,
yes.
Always a pleasure being with you, man. This was certainly a lot of fun.
I'll talk to you guys on Friday, I believe. I'll be with you.
Oh, you're back with us on
Friday?
Because,
yeah, with the rookie minicamp getting underway, Gibbs will be down there with you guys. So I will be here.
But, of course, Gibbs manana. So tomorrow on the show, we will have Danny Shelton for you. Danny Shelton will be live in studio here.
The big man in the middle.
The big man in the middle. And, of course, the big man in the middle. And, of course, on Thursday, the rookies report. Obviously, all the latest news, ClevelandBrowns.com, the Browns mobile app. They'll tell you what's going on at FanFest. I can tell you I will be hosting a roundtable State of the Union with Sashi Brown and Andrew Berry. So you want to check that out. Matt and I will also be doing something with Ken Carmen and Lima.
Yes, Anthony Lima.
Anthony Lima. Sports Boy Tony. That's happening as well at FanFest.
Is that his name?
With a rookie minicamp. His Twitter is @SportsBoyTony.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wouldn't know.
So we'll be doing all that this weekend. Come on, check us out, FanFest, ClevelandBrowns.com, and the Browns mobile app. I'll be giving away some FanFest tickets as well on Twitter. For Dave DiNatale, I would like to thank Bill Polian and Paul Bazier for being with us. Of course, Sir Andrew Gribble. And, of course, the great Matt Wilhelm. I'm Nathan Zagura saying thanks for listening to Cleveland Browns Daily.
On ESPN 850, WKNR.
You've been listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, a production of the Cleveland Browns and ESPN 850 WKNR.